This is an interview with Mr. Clifford Wege in his home at 257 Jefferson Street, Bakersfield, California, on February 23, 1970. The interviewer is Camille Gavin. Mr. Wege, would you tell me where you were born and when and how you happened to come to Bakersfield?
I was born in Decatur, Olney, Illinois, on January the 16th, 1878. I left home as a mere boy of 15, started out in the world to seek my livelihood and adventure. And I am glad to say, in both brackets, they far exceeded my boyhood dreams during my school hours. At the age of 15, I left home and I went to Decatur, Illinois. And while I hadn't been there very long till I got acquainted with the superintendent of the street railway. And for some reason, he took quite a liking to me. And he gave me a position as conductor. Yet I was only a mere boy, but I could fill the bill all right. Later, I was promoted to motorman when I was hardly big enough to look over the dashboard of the old antiquated cars as they are now, without vestibule or any protection from the weather. We operated those cars out in sub-zero weather many, many days, or in the rain and the sleet. Later years, at the turn of the century, I came to California having a brother living here, and at that time my health was not too good. And I was with him on his ranch in the upper Cuyama for about 4 years, working cattle.
What was your brother's name?
My brother was Jim. It was J.I. Wege, who served 12 years as a member of our Board of Supervisors, and 12 years as state senator from this district. In the 4 years I was with him in the mountains working cattle, I regained my health, and I sure enjoyed life in those 4 years. For I do love horses, I love cattle. I think I was raised on a saddle horse because I had one from the time I was big enough to climb in a saddle. In later years, I had returned to Illinois expecting to come back immediately. But I got into business back there and later on, which developed into the automobile business in the early days of the automobile industry. And shortly after that, I was married. And I stayed there in Illinois until 1924, while I was in and out of Bakersfield about every other winter.
I see.
During that period of time, my wife and I, we always enjoyed coming to Bakersfield for the winter months. We spent one winter in Florida, which we disliked very much, while Florida is a beautiful state, but there is no kick to the climate. We didn't like that at all.
You said now that your brother's ranch was in the Cuyama Valley?
It's up in the upper Cuyama, up in the Santa Barbara National Forest District. In fact, much of his ranch was in the Santa Barbara National Forest.
I see. And you worked as a cowboy while you were there.
Oh, yes. I worked as a cowpoke, and I sure enjoyed it. That was 4 years that I never will forget of my first experience in the cattle business.
Do you think there's anything different about the way cattle ranching was then compared to what it is today?
Oh, cattle ranching of that period of time and today is as different as daylight is from darkness. In those days when they broke a horse to ride, some buster would land on him and take a chance of being bucked off, and they'd fight it out until the horse was subdued. Today, they do not break horses that way. In fact, a horse knows very little about bucking. The way they bring him into saddle use. And while I've been bucked off several times and kicked at, but fortunately I escaped without any serious injuries.
You told me once about a string of horses or something that you took up to San Francisco.
Oh, yes, in 1904, on March the 27th, 1904, another cowpoke and I, we took a bunch of horses. They were buggy stock. There was not a car load of them, and you have to pack horses like sardines in a car if it don't, there'll be broken legs and whatnot. And not being quite a car load, my buddy and I, we just offered to take those through overland on our saddle horses and deliver them to San Francisco to the livery barn there. These horses were owned by my brother's father-in-law.
What was his name?
Mr. Maples. And as I say, we left on March 27th in the upper Cuyama. We stopped over one day here in Bakersfield. Then we proceeded north with our horses. The only beacon that we had to guide us on our way was to keep in touch with the Southern Pacific Railroad. That was it. There were no signs at all, road signs, or very few signs of entering a town at that period of time. In fact, between here and almost to Fresno, there was very little vegetation. North of Delano, there was quite a little bit. All that land was just lying out there, considered desert land. Yep. Land that I could have purchased at that period of time for $1 or $1.25 an acre, and people would have laughed at me, thinking what I was spending my money for. Today, that land is worth somewhere between $750 and $1,000 an acre, and the finest land in the state of California. We followed the Southern Pacific. That was our, as I say before, that was our only guide to guide us into San Francisco. And on the 9th of April, at 11 o'clock in the morning, I delivered the horses to the owners. Later on, after doing the town, my buddy had never been in a large city before in his life. And he got quite a kick out of doing San Francisco while I was a little bit familiar with the city. And I was able to get around in pretty good shape. But after we had spent our time in San Francisco, we saddled our horses and we came down the peninsula and cut across from San Jose country over into Gilroy. At Gilroy was Henry Miller's noted home ranch, where he made his home with his family.
That would be Henry Miller of Miller & Lux.
Henry Miller of the Miller & Lux family, company. Well, at that period of time, every town had watering troughs in the city, all through the town, for people to water their saddle horses or buggy stock. And it was getting dark, and we were watering our horses when about five or six cowboys came up, and they were the Miller & Lux cowboys, and they were shipping cattle that day. And I asked them where I could get a place, a good livery barn, and a place for a couple of cowpokes to rest for the night. One fellow asked me where I was from, and I said, Bakersfield, knowing that they would not know where Ozena was, that had not heard of, only right here locally. And the first thing he said do you know Jim Ogden? I said, do I know Jim Ogden? I said, Jim Ogden and my brother married sisters. He said, who's the sisters? I said, the Maple sisters. He said, you're correct. Come with us. And he took us out to the Big Miller's beautiful ranch quarters. And while it was getting late, they got the Chinese cooks out. We had a fine dinner. They wouldn't even let my buddy and I take care of the horses. The stable buck took care of those. Henry Miller was a great man for cleanliness. And the bunkhouses that he had on his ranch were outstanding. I marveled. They were clean, as he wanted all of his ranches clean. As I said before, that was one great thing that Henry Miller was in favor of, cleanliness. Never allow a dead animal to lie on the ranch anywhere. Burn it up. Keep your weeds down. And by all means, keep your kitchen clean. Mm-hmm. That was one of his great philosophies of life, was cleanliness. And I admire him for it. I have stayed many nights on the Miller and Lux ranches at different times, scattered throughout Kern County. Miller would never allow any rancher, his foreman, to charge anyone a nickel. Put them up for the night. See that they have good food. Their horses well fed. But never collect one penny. And it is always said that Henry Miller daily fed more people free of charge than the hotels and cafes did publicly.
That's real California hospitality, isn't it?
Well, there was an interest in that, though. Otherwise, these people traveling all the time, they were what they were considered the bindle stiffs. The hobos.
Oh.
And he did not want to antagonize any one of them due to the fact someone of them might touch a match to a grain field or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was one reason. Yet he was very charitable in thought and was a great man to take care of the public. And he was always for the down and out man. Henry Miller was a great man. Well, I did not know him personally. I have seen him, but he and my brother were great, great friends. They were wonderful friends, and there was nothing in the world that he wouldn't do for my brother in the way of farming.
Didn't you say that your brother came much earlier than you did?
My brother came to California in 1887 with TB.
Did he come to Bakersfield?
No, he came first to Visalia. His doctor back in Illinois told him to get out in the mountains and live like a coyote, and that was just exactly what he did. He was a very handy man, more so with stock and horses, saddle horses, than anything else. While he was a good rancher, but he was also a good carpenter. And while he was out in the hills, broke, he had 50 cents when he landed in Visalia. But the ranchers were all very kind to him up in the mountains. And as I say, he was being a great horseman. Well, he soon got in with them, and he would help them out in working their cattle. He'd help them build barns or other constructions. And then later on, the deputy sheriff of that district was killed. And I forget now the sheriff's name. Oh, Dan Overall was the sheriff. And he had gotten acquainted with my brother Jim. And he asked him to take over the job of the other deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he filled that position there for several years. In the meantime, his health had come back. But that lure of ranching was so deep in his blood, he just had to get back into that. And the rest of his life, he was always engaged in ranching, either in a grain ranch or cattle ranch. And just previous to his death, he sold on the advice of his physician, and he was at that time at the age of 82, he sold his two cattle ranches in Kern County and his cotton ranch in Tulare County. And he retired then, even from all political activities or any other business activities, until he passed on at the age of 82. Mm-hmm. He always said he never could pay his debt to the state of California, regardless of what he might do or give to the state. And he meant every word of that, because when he came here, he was in bad shape, yet lived to be the age of 82.
Well, I'm sure that both of the Wege brothers have given back a great deal to California, too, Mr. Wege.
Well, both of us have been very active. It was in the blood of the Wege family, work. And we all loved to work. Very little loafing, only on vacations or something like that, would find us not busy doing something constructive or beneficial to our pocketbook.
Was Bakersfield, you said you came in 1902. Now, was Bakersfield pretty well settled then? Was it?
Well, it was settling up quite lively at that time. I think Truxton Avenue was either oil paved, I mean Chester Avenue, mm-hmm. was oil paved or blacktop, I don't know now which, as far south as Truxton. Mm-hmm. North, I think, to about 22nd Street. Now how far west, I don't remember, but east to about 11 or about, let's see, east to about L or M Street.
But was it a quiet little town?
No, it was a roaring town. And very, very active. You see, the oil wells across the Kern River here had come into effect. And I think they raked hell with a fine-tooth comb, and they got every yegg, cutthroat, and gambler and brought them out here. In fact, at that period of time, you could not get a doctor to leave his home and call on a patient unless a police officer accompanied him. And when I landed here, the greatest commodity the world has ever known, the telephone, I do not believe there was over 150 telephones in Bakersfield. None outside the city limits, I do not believe. And in fact, we had a liverman here at that time, the name of Pete Phelps, and he was known by every farmer in the country. Naturally, we didn't have very many long-distance telephone calls, because if you used to get one through, it was hardly discernible. But most of those would be handled by telegram. And the minute they got a telegram for someone living in the country, they called for Pete to come with his team and buggy and did labor, though. Pete made a lot of money that way. And I do not believe that there was over 150 phones in Bakersfield at that period of time.
I don't know what the population was then, do you?
I do not remember, but I think it was around 9 or 10,000. Mm-hmm. They had the streetcars here at that time. And the highest wages was paid here in Kern County. And, of course, the oil workers, they kind of threw their shoulders back. They got $6 a day, drillers. And, of course, that was big money in those days. When at that period of time, you could buy bacon for about 10 cents a pound eggs for 8 to 10 cents, butter around 10 cents a pound. Naturally, $6 went a long ways in that period of time, far more than $26 would today.
Yes, I can certainly understand that. But then prices of food weren't too high, so but often in a...
How's that?
The prices, food prices weren't so very
no,
high
the,
then,
the
were they?
No, the price of food was not too high. And at that period of time, the Southern Hotel was considered the finest hotel between San Francisco and Los Angeles. And it's $2 a day there. A lot of people thought that was awful high price. What kind of a room would you get today for $2?
Not much, if you could find one. Well, were there a lot of horses and this sort of thing on the street? I suppose so.
A lot of what?
Horses.
Oh, yeah, horses. And one of the greatest things that I ever witnessed in my life, and I would pay a nice piece of money to see it duplicated today, and that was the mule skinners hauling borks and other commodities from the mines coming through Bakersfield. Those 16 and 18 mule teams strung out on a cable or a chain. And on two occasions, I saw this performance on the corner of 19th and Chester. Those mule skinners, they drank a lot. Every one of them had a jug of whiskey in his jockey box. But no matter what his condition was, you let him be on a corner of a city street and someone say, "You can't do it," he knew exactly what they meant, and he would show them that he could. And that would make a complete circuit with his wagon and a trail wagon behind, 16 mules strung out, make a complete turn, and not a wheel nor a mule touch the curbing. I have seen that on two different occasions, and as I say, I would love to see it again.
I can imagine. So how many mules did you say that they would usually have?
In 16 and 18. Mm. Now, in making this turn on the street, the first four horses, the mules or horses, were four abreast next to the wagon, and the rest of them were all strung out in pairs on this chain or cable. Well, in making that turn, those four there, they were called the wheelers. Those four horses pulled that entire load around. The other mules would drop back and let the chain or cable fall down on the pavement. Then they would step over the chain. The right mule would step over on the left side when they'd always make a left-hand circle.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just drag the double trees around. Now, a lot of people don't know what the meaning is, double trees. Well, that's what the horses' tugs are hitched to, and they're fastened to this chain. Well, they would jump, those right-hand mules, or what they would term in those days the off-mule, as soon as the leaders drop back and the chain fall on the pavement, they would step over that. In making this circuit, they'd have to.
Mm-hmm.
Just drag the double trees around. But when they got around and ready to straighten out, when the leaders was ready to get straightened out, you ought to watch those right mules getting over that chain. A mule's smart. He learns fast when he gets wrapped on the ankle a time or two with that chain, how to get over on that chain in ample time to not let it occur again. And at that time, where the Chevrolet is now on Chester Avenue, that was a big feed yard.
About 22nd
and Chester down in there. And that was a big feed yard, and there's where we'd see these long mule teams coming through town heading for the feed yard down there where they could stay overnight the best they could. Of course, they'd have plenty of food, hay and grain for their mules. Sometimes the fellows have to roll. Of course, they all had their blankets roll of blankets, they'd make their beds wherever they could down there.
Mm. Well, where were they taking it? This was borax, you say they were bringing in?
Yeah.
Well, where were they taking, why were they bringing it into Bakersfield?
I do not know. That, I could not answer that question, for I was not too familiar with the conditions at that period of time.
I just wondered if they possibly might, you know, were they unloading it there? You don't.
Oh, no, they were not unloading it down there. They were delivering it. Whether they were delivering it here in Bakersfield or taking it on to some other point, I do not know.
Well, it must have been quite a sight. I'd like to see it myself.
Oh, I would give anything to see it.
There are just one or two loose ends I'd like to clear out before we end the interview. There's a place called Wagy Flats. Up around Greenhorn,
yes,
I believe.
I know right where it is. I've been on it, but that is no—that was no relative of ours. I knew his sons, two sons, Milt and Roy Wiggy. But they were no relation of ours. Milt Wiggy at one time was city marshal.
I see.
And Roy Wiggy, did various. I just don't know whether he had a vocation or not. But anyway, they both died here in Bakersfield. Milt Wiggy had one son, Earl Wiggy, and he attained a very, very high position with the Standard Oil. However, he and his wife both were killed at the same time in a bad auto wreck up around San Francisco. He was in the San Francisco office.
And I don't believe that you ever mentioned your wife's name.
My wife's name was Chespa Chapelo.
I see.
I had her for 61 years. God love her. And that 61 years of our life was a bed of roses. She was so wonderful. Now here I am at the age of 92 alone. And it sometimes is gives me much food for thought. Over the past years.
Well, I'm sure you have many marvelous memories. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Wagy.
Would you play that back?